My name is Peter Squire, and I am the Winnipeg Regional Real Estate Board's Vice President of External Relations and Market Intelligence. Welcome to The Voice, where we invite government and community leaders to discuss topics important to you, our realtor members. I have the pleasure of Dr. Tom Carter, a well-respected Canadian housing expert, joining me to discuss Manitoba and what steps he believes are necessary to create a healthier housing market, which will help keep it more affordable and accessible to the majority of Manitobans. Hi, Tom. Thanks for joining me today on our Affordable Housing Podcast.
Thank you, Peter. Looking forward to it.
Great. Here's my first question. How do you define affordable housing in the context of the entire housing continuum, from homelessness right up to building new ownership housing?
Well, Peter, we've had a standard definition of affordability for quite some time. What we have been using is 30% of pre-tax income. In other words, if a household is paying 30% or more of their pre-tax income on rent or mortgage, hydro, water, and taxes, they're considered to be paying too much. And when you look at the city of Winnipeg, we do have affordability problems. If you look at renters, the most recent stats we have suggest that about 28% of renters are paying 30% or more of their income for housing. However, for homeowners, it's much better. Only about 5% of homeowners have an affordability problem. And of course, Winnipeg, although those figures are not good, Winnipeg is much better than many other cities where housing prices and rents are higher. However, there's more to housing than dollars and cents. I mean, you can look at affordability, but there's other things that you have to take into consideration. Services, for example. Services are very important to some sectors of the housing continuum. Location is important to some people, design, and of course, space. And I think you've said yourself recently that since the pandemic, people seem to be looking for more and more space. So yes, we have affordability problems, and we can talk about the continuum and go through it. But we have to realize that housing is a bundle of services, and it's not just how much people pay for housing, but how they achieve some of the other objectives that they're looking for in housing.
Thanks for explaining that, Tom. And I just wanted to add that beyond Winnipeg, and I'm sure you've seen that in some of your research, but I've certainly observed that in analyzing our multiple listing service sales throughout our market region, that we've even got more affordability besides Winnipeg out in the rural areas. So that 5% number you shared with us would likely be less in some cases in some of the outer rural towns that make up, you know, Manitoba.
Yes, and that's actually true, Peter. The 5% actually drops lower when you get outside of the city boundaries. It's down to about 4% in some places. So it can be more affordable if you're moving out into some of the rural areas as well. But I think it's important to look at the, you know, we talk about the housing continuum, and we have to realize that if there's problems in one part of that continuum, it can lead to problems in the other. So I think it's worthwhile just going through that continuum very briefly, just to highlight some of the problems. At the very low end of the continuum, of course, we have the homeless people. And although we have been providing more accommodation for homeless people, there are still a lot of people on the street, and there's still a need for more shelter units, but particularly for transition housing, because it's not just housing that the homeless need. It's a range of services. Services to hopefully get them off the street and get them back into the productive part of the economy. If you move up that continuum, for many years, governments built a lot of social and public housing, which was sort of rent geared to income. You only paid a certain percentage of your rent. But in the last two or three decades, there's been very little of that built. And in fact, that portfolio of social housing is declining in Manitoba. This has created some problems, but what governments have done, if they've switched to rent assist, in other words, they pay people a subsidy to get them to live in the private sector. in private sector housing. And that works very well for some people, particularly smaller households, because it gives them a greater choice of location, greater choice in design. But apparently where we're having problems is with larger families that need 3 and 4 bedroom units. And it's not always, we don't have a lot of 3 and 4 bedroom rental units out there, but it's not always just a lack of supply. It's the fact that the rent assist just doesn't provide enough money to get them out of the affordability issues. But as we move up that continuum, we get into the rental market. Here's where we have some other issues that I think really impact some other parts of the housing continuum. Rents have been increasing faster than incomes over the past decade. People in rental accommodation have been paying more and more of their income to cover a rent. And that's why we have almost 30% with an affordability problem. But of course, if they're paying in excess of 30%, it also limits their ability to get into home ownership, because that's where a lot of our first-time buyers live. And paying higher rents means that it's more difficult for them to save for a down payment, to get into home ownership. But right now, they're faced with a double challenge. They're paying more their income for rent, but as you know, housing prices are going up in Winnipeg, so the down payment is going up. So they're kind of hit from both sides. And not everybody can depend on the bank of mom and dad to help right. them out, okay? If you move on up that continuum, I think there's another part of the continuum where we're starting to see some problems, and that's with the elderly population. Our elderly population is increasing pretty rapidly, and it's going to continue to increase. There's a lot of old guys like me out there, okay? That means that there's more seniors that require a range of services. So where do we provide that range of services? Do we provide it within their homes, or do we build more assisted housing units, more care homes? So there's going to be a challenge there. I mean, it's been a challenge for some time, but I think down the road, we're going to face even more challenges with the elderly population. So yes, we have the continuum, but we have a few problems along the way.
Well, thanks for really going through that, Tom. I think you've covered off some of this probably already, but I'm going to still ask the next question, and maybe you can fill in where maybe you haven't touched on it. And that question is the following. In all of your extensive housing research work with realtor associations like ours, the City of Winnipeg, and other levels of government, what are the gaps you are seeing in housing affordability, and what really stands out as areas we need to address?
Well, I think just going back to the continuum, one of the real gaps we are going to have to address down the road is this gap where renters are trying to get into home ownership. Now, there are some people who would argue that we don't need more home ownership, that we should be a renting society.
Right.
But I don't think that's where society is right now, at least not in Winnipeg, maybe in Toronto and Vancouver. Where they have even greater problems with affordability. But there's still an awful lot of people in Winnipeg who really want to get into homeownership. And it's not just the middle-aged people, it's a lot of younger people. So it's that rental sector that are squeezed in the rental market and trying to save for a down payment. And right now, there isn't a heck of a lot of assistance available for them. You know, the federal government has some small initiatives, but they don't really amount to a whole lot of dollars. And I don't think they've kept up with the increases in costs. I think that with rising home prices and rising rents, this is a group that we're going to have to look at.
The next question, and I can't resist to ask this one since you did a major piece of work on this recently, is the one you worked with your colleague Scott McCullough at the University of Winnipeg's Institute of Urban Studies, where you spent considerable time as a professor there, and you did a comprehensive housing needs assessment for the city of Winnipeg. It is an impressive piece of housing research work, in my estimation. What I like about it is you bring forward some suggestions or options on what municipalities can do in cooperation with higher levels of government to facilitate the development and provision of housing. Maybe you can just share a few highlights here in this regard.
Traditionally, the federal and provincial governments have been the governments that have put the most money into housing and been most active in assisting with housing problems. But there is an awful lot that municipalities can do, and we presented quite a few examples in that study. I think one of the basic things is that the land supply is basically part of the municipal jurisdiction. And I think if municipalities can make sure that land is available in various locations and to accommodate a range of housing types and incomes, that's a very significant contribution that they can make. And many municipalities, including the city of Winnipeg, have run into land supply problems. So they simply have to plan to make sure that the supply is available. And I think it's particularly important in Winnipeg because if land supply is not available within the city, then people are going to go outside the city. And we're already seeing significant growth in places around the city. And these people are, most of them are commuting back into the city of Winnipeg. I think the other thing that cities can do is make surplus land available, city-owned land, make it available at a nominal fee or a nominal cost. Again, the city of Winnipeg has been active in that respect in the past, but I think they should continue to be. And also providing long-term leases for people who, particularly for groups trying to provide affordable housing, instead of selling land at a higher price, maybe have a long-term lease, which would lower the entry costs in particular. The other thing, though, I think that there's a lot of flexibility to work within zoning regulations that will facilitate housing. Inclusionary zoning, for example, make sure that zoning requires a certain percentage of affordable housing units so that developers just don't build all high-end housing. Also, I think density bonuses have worked in some places. If you allow higher densities in return for some contribution towards affordable housing, either as a number of units within a project, which is high density, or a cash contribution to provision of affordable housing in another part of the city, I think that's another way that municipalities can work. I think even within the zoning regulations, and I've heard some discussion, more discussion about this recently, allowing secondary suites. They have not always been very popular in the past, but I think that may change with an aging society, and particularly an aging society that's looking for some help with services. I think there's also other things that municipalities can do as well. For example, there's been a lot of loss of rental housing in some cities, and cities can pass regulations or bylaws to prevent that, particularly, say, condo conversions. Even in the city of Winnipeg, there's been quite a bit of conversions of rental apartments into condominiums. So there's been a loss of rental stock. Now, you can preserve that rental stock by putting some guidelines on it. Some cities have said you can't convert a rental apartment to a condominium unless the vacancy rate is above 5%, for example. You can't convert a rental apartment to a condominium unless you allow the existing tenants an option to purchase the unit, or unless you allow them to continue to rent on a long-term basis. So, you know, there's land supply, there's zoning, there's fees, there's rental regulations, there's a whole host of things. And I think another thing that is very important in cities right in Winnipeg right now is infill policy. We have a tremendous number of older housing units in the city of Winnipeg. We have one of the oldest housing stocks in the country. And this old housing stock, some of it is, quite frankly, I think, beyond repair. So we need sound policies that will promote infill development.
Thanks for that, Tom. I've got one more question. I can't let you go without asking it. And I know you've mentioned it to me. And that is, what can we do? And this is about first-time buyers again. How can we help them get a foothold in the ownership market in Manitoba? But I can assure you, our board has been active on this issue for years and wholeheartedly supports the Manitoba Real Estate Association in its current deliberations with the provincial government to bring about necessary changes. Can you share with me what I'm talking about, Tom?
Well, I'm pretty sure you're talking about the land transfer tax, Peter. And, you know, it is a problem, particularly for first-time buyers. Like, I was just looking at the Manitoba land transfer tax calculator. And if you buy a house for $390,000, I think the land transfer tax is $5,520. That's a real kick in the pants when you're buying your first home. It's a problem. With house prices going up, the land transfer tax is going up as well. Some provinces have moved to address this issue, particularly for first-time buyers. For example, Ontario provides a refund up to a maximum of $4,000 for first-time buyers. BC refunds everything, the cost of the land transfer tax, up to the price of $500,000. Now, prices in some parts of BC are pretty high, but even a break on the first $500,000 for first-time buyers is, you know, it's significant. So I would think that the province of Manitoba, I'm not suggesting they abandon the land transfer tax at all, although I'm sure some realtors would like to see that. But what I am suggesting is that they rethink it and maybe give a break to the first-time buyer. That would be a good first step, because when you have to fork out another $5,000-$7,000, that makes a big difference in terms of your accessibility to the home ownership market.
That's the closing cost that you can't finance. You can't include it within your mortgage payments. Right. So you have to come up with that additional closing cost before you can purchase that home that you want to buy. So $5,000 or $6,000, that can be enough to put you out of contention for a home you'd like to purchase.
Yeah. It really increases your down payment, I guess, is the way you look at it. Yeah.
Well, Tom, I really appreciate you joining me today. And I think you've given people, as I said at the very beginning, keen insights from your background on some of the areas we need to, you know, really delve into in terms of making Manitoba more affordable than it already is. As much as we say we're more affordable in terms of the housing we offer than other provinces, there's still much more work to be done to help Manitobans get into the, whether it be the rental or the ownership market.
Anyway, I appreciate it very much.
Again, thanks again, Tom. Have a good day.
Thank you.
I'd also like to thank our listeners for tuning in today, and we look forward to having you back for our next episode.